Yeah, that's what my dad and uncles and granddad and yeah. They all shared. We've been catching shad on boat now for just.
Can you hear me, Dan?
Yeah. Do you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, Andrew, I can hear him. I'm connected too. So he can hear you, but you can't hear him.
Unless I can. Unless he does want to pull the first hose out.
Is there a way to turn up?
That'll tell me if I got pressure coming in. And then I hit this blockage somewhere. Brandon? Right, where Dart could have come out and jammed somewhere in one of those hoses, you know. But the clutch is engaged, but I don't have any pressure. The clutch is going out.
We're up all Washington. I said, damn, Washington. I said, you know damn well.
It's disgusting.
That's that Washington. You got to go across the goddamn country to buy that Washington.
That's your real money.
Yeah, they look so bad. I would buy them.
I don't know if you're here. Never.
On the
table,
want to stand
in
there. Really?
But they always catch and see you.
The diaper derby races.
It's absolutely disgusting.
This one is very different out here down there.
No.
Terrible. Well, he's planning them, that's all. It's a Coleswell.
Why isn't that coming up?
Drag it from the grab the top of the window.
Okay.
Two miles. And they're going to cut 15 days off the street.
I don't want to mute myself.
Is the
they'll probably cut it off the back end.
Sure.
This number. This person. This is me, and this is the host. I'm the host, so I should probably.
Who's right, many of us? We have a Domicron.
If you leave yourself.
Cancel out of here.
Yeah.
Did I tell?
Sorry.
I did a
I'd expect you to see you signed in here. Just kind of weird.
So, from what I don't understand, I see participants, but I don't see the hires.
They're going to take off. Start traveling. August.
Still have technical difficulties.
I think we're close.
I don't know where we're going.
It's one of those things that overcomplicates the regular
season. Dan, are you still there? Can you try to say something?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Oh, okay. So I just had the wrong speaker on.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I can hear you now.
Yeah.
You could probably just share the screen
a couple times.
No, but like, you know, like the days where, you know. Hey, Dan, can you see the screen?
No, I just called in. I didn't use the the. You know, the visual.
That's the best you've ever heard of.
I'm sorry about that.
I think Don might have come in.
Get your roasted duck. Yeah.
Tea specialist.
You hang up on?
Nope. You know, I should still be there. I just oh, there. All right. I think yep.
Ready to go?
Yep.
All right, everybody. We'll call the FMAC meeting to order and thank everybody for coming. We're going to go over the replenishment plan for this coming year. But first, I would like to take a moment of silence to remember our friend Kevin Wade, who was a very important part of FMAC. Certainly anybody that knew him well knew that what kind of a gentleman he was and how unselfish he was and everything that he wanted with this bay was for everybody and not himself. And take just a moment of silence for him. All right. I think we have some new members anyway to get acquainted. I guess we could let everybody kind of give us their name and what they're about.
I think that would be good there. You want to start? Beverly is our newest member there.
I'm Beverly Ledford. I'm honored to join you.
Glad to have you.
Hey, Jackie Shannon, Chesapeake Bay Foundation.
William France, Commercial Waterman.
J.C. Huddins, Commercial Waterman.
Tommy Kellum Seafood, Wings, Virginia.
Jim Johnson, Johnson & Son Seafood.
Bernie George, Waterman.
Roger Brown, I'm from Jared Bills.
Karen's run away.
Everybody?
Sure.
Vernon Rowe, VMRC.
Missy Southworth, Vim.
Rob O'Reilly, VMRC.
And back up around. Andrew here. Andrew Button, BMRC at the front. I'll just hand these out. This is actually the replenishment plan.
Who's on remotely?
And Dan Dan Dice. Yeah.
Dan Dice, Tangier Waterman.
There we go.
Tell you what, Dan, we can hear you all over Gloucester.
I'm here live, Chris.
So what I'd like to do is go ahead and run through the whole plan from sort of start to finish there. And then if there are questions, discussion, sort of break it up by pieces of the plan as we go through and hopefully come out the other end of the meeting with, hopefully a smack endorsement there or any sort of changes or anything else that you might suggest or to come to something to take to the commission here at the end of the month, at the end of this, but just sort of run through it, discuss it, and go from there. So with that, I'll dig into it. And it sort of loosely follows what I have outlined in this document here, and just the back page, the last part of the attachment there is actually, I might reference that, so just that spreadsheet there on the back is important there. So with that, we'll roll right into it here. So I always start, as my predecessor there did before me, Jim, with our current harvest data there from the public and private season. So this is through the 2017-2018 season. As you can see, there was a little bit of a rebound for the first time in 2 years on the public ground season. And this was somewhat anticipated due to the higher spat sets we'd seen in harvest areas in the previous years. So there were pretty good baywide spat sets in 2015 and 2016. We started to see those reflected in the 2017-18 harvest year. So this is basically, this ended last April, these numbers. But the good news is that public ground production was up slightly compared to previous years. This is a breakdown of just the public ground. So you can see it sort of had that peak there when there was peak effort in 2014 and some good spat sets, and it sort of took a little bit of dip, but it started to sort of stabilize and come up slightly in that last full season that we had there. Just to sort of show you how private oyster harvest, which is still fairly dependent on wild spat production, is sort of closely correlated to that. You can see that tracks pretty well. There's been some little ups and downs, but generally the two fit together pretty nicely as it goes there. So this, as I said, we had those sort of two good years of pretty high spat sets, and as I'm sure many of you are aware, this last year hasn't been the best, but really what this is showing here is the 2016 spat set of all the rivers combined. So you can see that generally we were getting some pretty good high numbers in some areas, just sort of showing that it was a sort of normal year, if you will, sort of the new normal, I guess, where it's pretty consistent, pretty baywide in most areas where there's shell on the bottom. This is 2017, and if you notice that scale dropped down a little bit there, it was close to 900 at the top. It's down to 500 now in this axis over here. That the spat sets weren't as good and weren't quite as widespread throughout all areas in 2017. And this is 2018. You can see it sort of looks drastically different. It doesn't really fit the curve there. Basically, it was sort of anomaly in terms of where oysters were settling. So areas that normally get pretty good spat sets weren't, areas that sometimes don't, got a little bit better spat sets, particularly in the Tangier Sound, saw some mildly elevated spat sets, and the lower James River had very extraordinarily high spat sets, almost as many oysters as you can fit per square meter on the bottom there. But everywhere else was sort of generally lower than expected or lower than normal here. And it's a pretty, what the replenishment program does is relatively simple and straightforward. It's just a matter of choices that we have to make in terms of where the effort is placed in terms of replenishment, shell planting, harvest effort. That's a complicated thing. The sort of simple management aspects are we need a certain level of shell on the bottom in order to have basically enough room for new recruits the next year. So we need to maintain that shell base, and really sort of 5 liters, as I'm sure you've heard many people say before, sort of the minimum threshold, where you can actually basically just have enough substrate there that if the spat are there, you're actually going to have enough room, literally, for them to settle. And sort of 10 is ideal. So really the replenishment that we do is targeted in these areas to sort of keep a minimum of 5 and ideally 10 liters per square meter of shell on the bottom. And that just gives you that if the spat are there, you can take advantage of that set, and that area can sort of maintain itself. If you don't have that shell base of either living oysters or new shell, those areas are gradually going to get depleted as those oysters that are there are taken. And we've seen that in areas once that substrate drops below that level, if they're continuously opened up to harvest, that population just keeps going down. And so really that's really what the replenishment program does, is maintain that base so that there's room for the oysters to set and that harvest area can continue. So that's sort of just bay-wide pictures of everything that's going on there, so pretty big picture stuff. So this year, the funds that we have some increased funding for the second year in a row, which is good news. And with that increased funding, there was some language changes made in terms of a distinction between replenishment and restoration with the budget language that came through. So administration has taken that replenishment is harvest areas, so areas that are in the rotations open harvest. And they've taken restoration funding to mean areas that are strictly non-harvest areas. So this doesn't mean that it's a specific project necessarily that's dedicated for restoration, but restoration funding is funding that can be used for non-harvest areas only, and replenishment funds are specifically for harvest areas. So that's sort of the different breakdown here. In the governor's budget this year, he did include an additional $1 million that split 50-50, a $500,000 increase for restoration and a $500,000 increase for replenishment, bringing our total amount for restoration, replenishment, and general funds. we anticipate that to close to this, close to $4 million there. The Nature Conservancy is also going to provide a grant for some restoration and replenishment work. And there's other non-general funds, primarily the user fees that will be used as part of this plan. In addition, VMRC has applied for some federal grants through various NOAA programs for sort of specific restoration plans, primarily in the Lynn Haven and Piankatank River. So this sort of funds is sort of separate from the normal replenishment general funds dollars. They're a little bit more project specific, but that's just sort of the funding breakdown that will be included in this year's replenishment plan. Replenishment and restoration plan, excuse me. So the first thing that we're going to go over is the James River seed. So for a number of years, we've moved a small amount of James River seed primarily to the Potomac tributaries. You may remember last year that with the help of the committee members, we developed a rotational harvest strategy in these areas. So the previous years, we'd moved some seed up to primarily Nominati, Comico, and Acone, and then that area was immediately open to harvest. And in order to sort of basically increase the amount of harvest for the dollars that we're spending, we proposed having a rotational plan where that area wouldn't be immediately open to harvest after we planted seed there. And last year, we put out a notice to move James River Hantong area seed. I believe we noticed for $10 a bushel to move seed up there, and we didn't have any harvesters or transport folks who were willing to move the seed up there for that price. So we kind of took another angle to get it done, and we were able to move from an area in the lower James River that we had recently planted some fossil shell, and I got an extremely high spat sets, hire a boat to dredge some of that shell plant, some of that seed up, and move that up to Nominai the cone for a significantly lower cost. So we were able to do that for net $6 to $7 a bushel range. We moved a little less than right around 4,000 bushels of seed up there last year. So this year, this last summer, we planted that same area again and again. It received a very high spat set, and we're not sure if we'd be able to quite get a full 25,000 bushels of seed out of that area. But probably at least 20,000 and sort of that ratio split would be, as you see here. And what we'd like to do in part to alleviate, sort of the impact of those baywide poor spat sets is sort of move some of the seed to other areas. The upper Rappahannock, which suffered some of that freshwater mortality and also had very low spat sets, would be an area that would receive some of this seed, as well as a portion of the upper Pocomoke Sound, would get some of that seed here. So I'll show you those areas here in a little bit, but this is just sort of the upper James River seed standing stocks. This is just the seed areas here, just to sort of give you a little background on those. You can see that actually the last 3 years, they've sort of, the standing stocks there have been coming down. This is just the small in those areas. And this is actually something that would be of note for this committee is the number of market oysters in those upriver areas has taken a significant or substantial dip in recent years here. So that's just sort of one of the reasons why that we're going to not put added pressure on those seed areas by moving large abouts for the state ourselves, and as well might be a reason for maintaining our current prohibition on out-of-state transfer that we discussed at earlier SMAC meetings last year. So currently there's still no out-of-state transfer for that James River seed area. This is actually a picture of some of the shells that we planted in the lower James River last year. So as you can see there, I mean, there's basically spat on top of spat. There's almost no room for more oysters to set on those shells. And so this is what we'd be moving to the areas here is the Ucomico. The seed areas, probably O'Brien's and Tom Jones would be the two bars here and here that would get seed. We're thinking that Muratico at Area 8 would be a good area for some seed to go from the lower James River area, as well as maybe some of the bars off Waterview there. And the Pocomoke Sound, this is sort of Area 13, we call it, but sort of Shell Rock. It's had a lot of shell planted there, but the spat sets haven't been great there. We did, in the mid-2000s, move some Great Wicomico seed there, and it saw, you know, a pretty good return on that, and we'd like to try that with some of this higher salinity, lower James River seed, sort of lightly planted in this area here that hasn't had a very good spat set in a number of years. And that's the seed movement that we'd like to do, primarily from that area that we've been planting now with fossil shell in the lower James, move that throughout the bay to sort of share the wealth, if you will, to use a cliche of the spats that this area has received now for 2 years. It's been quite good. And also we can move more for lower cost than we could from the Hantong seed in the upriver areas. In the past, we've done private ground seed transfers in the Piankatank and Great Wicomico. You may be familiar with the program. It was usually people would sign up in advance, and they'd be required to return 2 bushels of shell for every bushel of seed harvested. This year, we don't feel it would be good to offer this program. The spat sets have been extremely low. I wouldn't say extremely low, but much lower than normal in these areas. And the per bushel counts are low enough that we don't think private industry would have much interest in moving seed that's, you know, 400 to 300 per bushel count. So this wouldn't be offered this year. There are a couple areas that we might lightly reshell, but the good news is for the most part, the upper seed areas, which are sort of in you know, Cape Toon and Palace's Bar here, are in pretty good shape. You can see that the actual number of smaller market oysters are relatively stable there, so the colch is actually in pretty good shape. So they don't need a lot of shell. There's just not very many spats, so the counts are going to be lower than we would like to do the seed program there. Same thing with the Great Wicomico. The seed areas are in the upper portion here. These are the lower area. That's the hand scrape area. But the seed areas, again, didn't receive a very good spat set. The good news is, again, the colch is in relatively good shape. The number of smalls in the markets are relatively stable there. It's just that the counts aren't very good, and probably not many people would be interested in that seed program. So we're going to give it a year, hope for a good spat set, and readdress this next year. This brings us to the meat of the plan here, which is mainly the shell planting that we would be proposing. So this is sort of a brief breakdown of the areas that we feel are most in need of shell. I'll go over them area by area, but in total it's 586 acres is what we'd like to try to get shelled with the funding that we have this year. I will note that I mentioned earlier that, you know, sort of the minimum threshold of shell is at 5 liters per meter squared. And of the harvest areas that we're monitoring, almost 700 acres are sort of below that threshold. So actually 658 are below that sort of 5 liter threshold. And an additional 952 are below that 10 liter threshold that we actually sort of target as ideal for sort of a stable area. But this is sort of the areas that we think we'd be able to afford to do basically And I'll go through them area by area here shortly. Also, that spreadsheet that I mentioned in the back has these areas individually listed there, too. So we'll start with Tangier. You hear me there, Dan?
I hear you.
Okay. So most of the shelling that we'd like to do is on areas that are just going to be closed to harvest at the end of this month. So California and Thoroughfare there are the main areas that we'd be getting that we'd like to shell next year. They've had a pretty good amount of effort on them this season. So the Colts numbers there are actually before the harvest. So they're going to be even lower than that. And all those areas will probably be in need of shell. And these areas did get an okay spat set onto the shell that we planted last year. So we'd like to continue to have that shell there and ready and waiting should another set occur in this area. Here's a sort of close-up of those areas. Again, Thoroughfare at the top, California, or public ground 8 down at the bottom. So this graph shows actually the blue on the bottom here is actually the spat set. So you can see that, you know, there's been some ups and downs, and this year was actually sort of on average a little bit better than some. That orange in the middle there is the number of smalls, and this gray line at the top actually is actually the number of markets. So that's actually what's available to be harvested. And you can see that that's actually the smallest portion of there. So even though this spat set looks good, you know, here, it doesn't really translate to 2 years later, what you're seeing here, to a, you know, high number of markets. It's just that there's some there. But when you get poor spat sets, you know, you have even lower number of markets, that little gray piece right there. So really, you can kind of track that spat set to smalls to markets the next year. It's not a perfect relationship, but generally that's what you see there. So that's area one there in the Pocomoke, Tangier Sound rotation area. Again, you can see that, you know, we're in okay shape spat set wise in this last year, but again, the number of markets there isn't really huge, but at least there's, you know, some new recruits coming along there in future years. This is a standing stock, so it just has the actual bushels broken out, so this is just small and market there. And again, that orange is the number of markets, so that's what you're working on harvesting. And you can see that's actually down after the harvest of the area we got last year. So both the smalls and the number of markets after this area was open in the 2017 season obviously are going to be lower than they were before. This is area two that they're working on now, and you can see that, you know, they've started to recover, but there hasn't been this, you know, big spike because that area hasn't really seen a great spat set. So again, you know, they've come up modestly since the last time they were open, but they haven't quite recovered to the same levels that they were before. So we wouldn't anticipate the harvest there to be as good as they were the last time this area was open. This is everything combined for sort of a big picture. And again, you kind of see some large ups and downs, but in general, the standing stocks, particularly, you know, this one at the top there, has not fully recovered there. That's that. All right. And moving on to the Rappahannock. Again, the areas, there's a lot more in areas in need than we'd probably be able to shell, but the ones that we'd like to focus on are areas 3 and 5 that were just open to harvest this year. In those areas, we're looking at about 56 acres or so, give or take, of replenishment on these harvest areas. So primarily Temples Bay and Parrott's Rock would see some replenishment effort this year. Again, I'll sort of roll through what we've seen there in the total big picture river area so you can kind of see that for sort of get an idea of what's going on area by area. So this is area one that was opened last year to harvest, last 2018 season. So it won't come onto rotation this coming season. It will be 2 seasons from now, but you can see it started to recover after the shell planting that happened in 2018. Spat sets weren't great. Again, this gray line at the top, but the number of markets and smalls is starting to rebound slightly. But again, it's not at that level that we saw back when it was open previously. Area two, this area will be coming into rotation this coming season, so the 2019 season. And again, you can see that this number of markets has started to recover. But again, we didn't get a very good spat set for recent years, so we're still working off that 2014-15 spat set that was very good. So once this area has been worked, if there isn't a good spat set and good replenishment, you know, those numbers will continue to drop down in subsequent years if it comes into rotation again without seeing that spat set. But again, you know, it's important that we keep replenishing these areas so when a spat set does occur, we're there and waiting for it. But again, you can see that, you know, it started to recover slightly, but it's not going to be at the same level where it may have been if it, you know, if it did get a really good spat set in subsequent years. So that's area two. Area three, which was opened this year, you can see again that, you know, the number of markets has recovered a little bit. It started to recover here prior to it opening, and it was almost the same levels where it was beforehand, but again, it hasn't gotten a good spat set, this blue portion of the graph, in a number of years. And you can see the number of markets, this is sort of halfway through the harvest season there, are probably going to be substantially lower. And again, the spat set behind it wasn't there to bring this area back up. So we'd anticipate without good spat set, this area may again, you know, it sort of depends a little bit on what nature does there, but if we don't have another good spat set like we've had these sort of every 2 or 3 years there, then again, this area may start to decline slightly. area four, so two and four would be the areas coming into rotation again. Again, you can see where this, they had relatively high spat sets here, and the area has started to recover. The number of markets there is close to where it was before, so this area actually should be pretty good. But again, there hasn't been good spat sets in a number of years now, so if we don't get one this coming season after it's open to harvest, if it's replenished and you get another 2 or 3 years of, you know, spat sets like we saw this year, then this area would, you know, potentially begin to decline too. But again, if you're there with shell on the bottom and you do get a good spat set, might not be there that first year, but 2 or 3 years down the road, you'd again see that market pick up. So it's important that, you know, you keep these areas maintained at least at that 5 to 10 liter per square meter minimum. Area five, again, you can see sort of the same thing, kind of a pretty stable trend there in the Rappahannock that's pretty consistent. What happens in one area tends to happen in the other area too. Again, you can sort of see those previous years and, you know, decline in spat sets in the recent years. This was the area that you can see this gray portion up at the top was a larger portion of the total number of oysters on the bottom there. And when it was just recently opened up, part of the disappointment was that it hadn't quite recovered to the level it was previously. So there weren't as many market oysters to be had at the beginning of the season. On top of that, the freshwater mortality that we saw in this area didn't help things. area six, again, this was the area that was open the previous year. And you can see that, you know, the number of markets after being open has been reduced. The number of smalls is about the same proportion. But the spat sets, again, are generally lower in these upper areas. It's important to sort of keep an eye on that scale there on the left. But, again, the 2018 year lower than sort of the average we've seen in recent years in this area. And so that's the Rappahannock, which brings us to the York, which we didn't do any replenishment work in last year. So we'd like to try to get some work done there this year. This Area 2 will be open to harvest this coming season. So right now we're on the mobjack rotation here. So Area 2 would be coming on next year. We'd still like to do a little replenishment in that area, in areas that need it, in the hopes that we get a good set this year. But also Timberneck and the other areas in upriver. Here's a sort of closer view. Aberdeen's, Pages, and Timberneck's down here at the bottom. We'll get some replenishment shelling this year. And we'd like to keep the maintain our sanctuaries in these areas. Some of those are getting a little bit low on shells as well, but restoration-specific funds can be used in those sanctuary areas, so that wouldn't take away anything from the replenishment of open harvest areas. So these are the oyster densities. Again, you can see those good spat sets that we worked on for a number of years haven't been repeated. Again, the gray is the number of markets, so you can see the last time this area was open, there was a higher number of markets per square meter, and there's a little less now, and there's hasn't been a higher than average spat set in a number of years to sort of work on in the future, but putting shell down will make sure that there will be one. If the oyster larvae are in the water, there'll be room for them to set on. Mobjack is another area that is open this year, and we didn't do any replenishment work there last year, so Pulse's Coast Ache, and this is Browns Bay down here. We'd like to maintain those areas. The Colts levels were already pretty low there this year, and those areas are being worked right now. It's one of the actually opened just the first of on Friday, actually. So this area will be open for a month, and we anticipate those Colch levels will get a little bit lower, and we'd like to keep those areas going. So we're looking at replenishment in those areas. Again, Toast Ache, Pults, and Browns Bay down here. Browns Bay hasn't been open to harvest, but this area is one of the areas that we've been gradually building up. And we'd like to look at that future harvest discussion seasons as potentially an area that we could do something with, but that'll be a discussion for another point. But those are areas that we've been shelling or been maintaining and surveying now for a couple of years, and we'd like to make sure that we're maintaining those for the future as well. Again, standing stocks, you can see that the number of markets there actually is pretty good compared to the number of smalls, but the spat sets, again, in this area weren't phenomenal this year. And that would be the plan there. The lower James River, I didn't include the spat sets on this graph because it would just make it look goofy because they were so high. But we're seeing in many of the harvest hand scrape areas there counts of, you know, over 1,000 per square meter in some cases. So very, very high. But you can see that the number of markets and smalls actually has increased slightly since, even though it was worked, has been worked every year. We still have concerns about maintaining the colch there. We've been replenishing these areas consistently every year. So if we stop doing that and those colch levels do fall, we would anticipate that these numbers go down. But right now, we haven't taken a look since this season with the effort that shifted there. We haven't been out since those areas closed. We'll take another good look at them in the spring. So this was the fall survey there. We'd anticipate that this would look a little different right now. But this is what we're going on from the fall, and we'll take another look at the colch levels this spring and sort of get a better picture of where that replenishment effort needs to be. But roughly 157 acres in Lower James is what we're looking at reshelling this year. Deep Rock hasn't gotten any replenishment effort in last year, and right now the colch levels are very good in this area. So we don't anticipate having to do any replenishment this year, but this area has seen some of the highest number of boats that we've seen working there in recent years. So I've heard upwards of 30 boats have been out patentonging, doing pretty well. So we'd probably want to take a look at this in the spring and sort of just take a good look and see what kind of impact that's had to these areas. But these areas, again, not on rotation, minimal replenishment effort, and generally the standing stocks have been going in the right direction. So that's a good thing there. You can see, again, the number of markets. The bigger that piece of orange on these stock assessment, the more markets there are on the bottom. And the numbers there per square meter are, you know, higher than 10, which is, you know, pretty good there. You could probably, if you had a long enough pair of shaft tongs, make a day's work on that. So that's good news for the Deep Rock area. So that's the shell planting portion. We'd also like to, didn't make a map for it there, but Blackberry Hangs, which I've heard as of this morning had over 40 boats on it. We'd like to do a little bit of replenishment work up there, so about 12 acres or so. If we can get some house shells up that way, that'd probably be a good spot for those. Just to maintain that area as well. So that's the shell planting portion of the restoration replenishment plan, which brings us to alternative substrates. So we did discuss sort of the expansion of use of alternative substrates last year. We have a number of areas that are permitted. So this is just a quick rundown. Chesapeake Bay, Deep Rock, Rappahannock Area 1 and 2, James River, Nansen Ridge, Pocomoke Sound. The two new areas that would be primarily using that federal money would be the Lynnhaven River and upper portions of the Piankatank. So this is sort of separate from restoration, or separate from the replenishment of public grounds. This would be restoration projects in the Piankatank and Lynnhaven. The Pocomoke Sound would be a restoration project, but the areas in the James River, Rappahannock, and Chesapeake Bay that we planted last year with some alternative substrate was primarily in the Rappahannock, but this year we have existing permits for these other areas as well. These would be harvest areas that would be open to harvest. And the good thing about potentially having that federal money for this alternative substrate is that could bring the per unit cost down of all of the areas down slightly. So if you know you're paying a dollar for a stone over here and you're buying 10 stones, if you buy 20 stones, you might be paying 50 cents. So basically, sort of if you scale up some of these projects and piggyback harvest areas with the restoration areas, you can bring hopefully the per unit cost down and actually get more alternative substrate planted, including on some of these harvest areas. The harvest areas, or this is the restoration areas that would primarily be in the upper portion of the Pianca tank, so away from the seed areas, which are down here. Most of the areas that aren't harvested on would have some of this restoration project there. hopefully would provide larva for the areas further downstream and maintain our seed areas. These are areas we have existing permits off deep rock, so these aren't actually on the best parts of the existing oyster bottom, but they're on firm sandy bottom. And we have large areas permitted, but really the sort of footprint of where we'd actually do these stone plants would be relatively small, and it wouldn't be on top of living existing oysters. It would be sort of on that muddy sand edge in the hopes of actually sort of expanding areas that you could work out there. This is an area in the lower Rappahannock. We've done some planting with stone there in Butler's Hole area, and this is another area that we have permitted that we could do some alternative stone planting on as well. It's that small size stone that you can actually scrape on and doesn't damage oysters in the harvesting process, and it gets a pretty good spat set as well. This is another area in the lower Rappahannock area too that we have permitted for stone planting. Again, looks like a very large area, but the actual area that we'd be planting would be substantially smaller than that. We just wanted to have a large block that we could work with, and again, we'd be working on sort of that muddy sand edge away from any existing oyster resource there. last year, we did have, as part of the plan, potential larger size stone planting in the upper Pocomoke Sound, as well as a component to sort of clean this area of any existing oysters. So we didn't get the permits that we needed in time, and there were some questions about funding, so we weren't able to complete the stone planting portion of it, but we were able to, basically this is an oyster rock here that sort of straddles the line here as well. We were able to hire a boat to sort of clean any shells and live oysters from this area that there were poaching concerns about, and where we'd like to put some larger size stone and move them further into Virginia onto the better parts of the oyster rock. So these areas are ready to go, and we'd like to at least do a portion of this work with larger size stones to see how it goes, and if it works well, potentially scale up in the future if funding and the success of the project allows. And that would be the alternative substrate planting in the upper Pocomoke. And then again, this would be federal money. We have applied and looks like we'll receive a grant for restoration work at the Lynn Haven. So these are areas primarily mostly intertidal areas. So this work would be done similar to what we've done on the Eastern Shore, where a lot of the best oyster strike is happening in these intertidal areas. This is Humes Marsh. So this is all state-owned marsh in this area. So basically, to sort of minimize our user conflict, we'd be working primarily in that shallow water area and use a combination of possibly some dredge shell from the seaside and this alternative small-sized stone in these areas along Humes Marsh and that sort of intertidal range. And if funding allows, we might do a little bit of a sort of living shorelines combination project here around First Landing State Park that might include some larger size substrate as well as that smaller size substrate that can be washed off a barge and potentially some dredge shell from the seaside as well. Sort of a combo project here. And again, this would be with separate federal grant money and in areas that we would hope would have minimized user conflict. So not in deep water areas that are being crabbed on away from private oyster ground leases. Basically in that intertidal area adjacent to state-owned marsh or state-owned properties here. And that's the run through of the potential oyster replenishment plan for the 2019 year. I'm not allowed to tell you. No, that's actually Seaside, Hogs Bay on the eastern shore. So that's one of those intertidal areas there.
All right. Well, thank you, Andrew. I'm sure there's going to be some questions. I know starting off, I have a question. If we're going to take some oysters off the Manhattan Reef to move to different areas to plant, how does is the salinity compatible there with, say, somewhere like Maratica Barn, the Rappahannock?
I think we'd be within that sort of 5 parts per thousand there. So these areas should be pretty close. We wouldn't want to move them any further up than that. Areas that we moved them to in the cone this year, which are sort of in that 10 parts per thousand, which is sort of similar to Maratico, they've been doing pretty well. So we wouldn't want to move them too much further upstream, I don't think. It's probably a good thing that we didn't plant the Nomini this year, potentially. And, I mean, you saw the Potomac, what happened up there. But this is a little bit higher salinity area. But this year it's actually been, you know, running pretty low there too, so these are pretty freshwater tolerant compared to, you know, other areas. But
you know, is that something that when the time hits that you have to do it at that time, or is that something that you can kind of wait around a little bit to see if salinities come up or improve?
We try to move them in the relatively early spring. If you start moving seed too late in the year, once the water warms up, you can have issues with cow nose rays. So, you know, we've had some seed plants that you push too far back into April or something like that, and, you know, or May even, and, you know, the water warms up and you have oyster juice in the water and they show up. So we'd like to try to get it done sort of April, May if we can, but you know, we could hold off on doing it entirely, but it's sort of one of those, even if you salinities do start to come up and then, you know, 3 months later you have something happen like this year. But, I mean, I think the areas that we move it to wouldn't have an issue in terms of what we saw this year. So they probably do all right in those areas. So this survived, what, 5 parts per thousand for a good chunk of this year. So presumably it could do the same in other areas.
When will you look at those oysters again?
The ones that we moved?
Uh-huh.
We could take a look this spring before we move any seed up there. But late last fall, they were doing quite well in the area that we moved from the cone. So.
Thank you. Anybody got a question? Comment?
I have a question just for my notes. The areas where you're experimenting with the alternative substrates, are you – are they harvesting
feed oysters,
or are they growing out more?
Areas in the Piank tank, those are strictly no harvest areas. In the Rappahannock, those areas have been harvested on, at least the ones that we're talking about here. And we have planted some larger size alternative substrate on a number of different sanctuary areas too. But the ones that we proposed for the harvest areas, those would be market-sized oysters, so not just seed oysters, but we'd actually open those up to market harvest.
And the alternative substrate is usually a stone, small stone?
Usually sort of that golf ball-sized crushed granite. I think in the sanctuary or close harvest areas, we'd probably like to use a little bit larger-sized stone, but in the harvest areas, we sort of have a kind of sweet spot where it's not so fine that there's no space for spat. But not so big that if you're scraping or on the area, they're actually busting each other up with the concrete. So
it's fairly successful.
It has been. You can have issues if the bottom is a little too soft and you don't get a set right away. It can start to settle a little quicker than shell can. But if you get a decent set and you're on that sort of sandy mud sweet spot, it has worked quite well. I think Butler's Hole, it grows a little bit of a snappy oyster there, but once it's sort of busted up, it's done, you know, pretty well in those areas.
Have you looked at them this year?
We looked at them in last year during the patent time survey. So they're still doing pretty good. Yeah.
Andrew,
Area 8, Maratica, and Rappahannock. Don't see anything. Not going to do anything with that this year.
We'd like to put some of that seed up that area.
Yeah, that's really what I was going to recommend. But that was a lifesaver this year. I think it really helped the Rappahannock part of it. Yeah. 7, just going to leave that.
Maybe some more there at the water view area there. So there's a 10,000 bushels will probably go if you get that much, a pretty long way up there. So sort of area 7 and 8 would both get some of that seed, would be the idea. And that would also, a lot of those upriver areas, that's where you saw some of that high mortality. So hopefully, those will spawn and kick some of that spat back downriver there. So.
Questions or comments from anybody? Dan, you got any questions?
Nope, I'm good.
All right.
Hey, I have a question on Browns Bay. That you said that's never been worked yet, has it?
Not recently.
Recently, yeah. How much water is that?
Depth wise? Yeah. What did you say, Vernon? How much water do you think there in Browns Bay? Like 10, 12 most areas?
Yeah, I'd put it 12 to 18.
Yeah. So a little deeper there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it used to be a good rock years ago.
That is that's below the traditional Patenton line there too. But
okay.
So that'd be a discussion if it does come up to we get that area going again, that'd be something we could look at, what type of gear type there and what we could do with it. But I'd like to keep it going.
Anybody else, any questions or comments or anything they'd like to bring up? Tommy.
What are you anticipating the cost of the fossil shells at this year?
It'll probably be in on the cheaper end in that $3 range, the $4 range. So,
but the higher end?
Higher end.
The average.
On average, probably be right around $4 a bushel. Some areas we can do for cheaper than that, other areas. And it also depends on the size of the project there. So if we go a little bit bigger, those prices can come down.
What's the price of house share?
We'd like to actually increase that slightly this year. It's been $2. I think we could probably get more and be potentially fair to everyone there to increase that to $2.50 this year. So basically maintain the folks who have been giving us house shell and hopefully expand that a little bit. And in a lot of cases, we could, particularly working close to shucking houses, we'll be able to do that for cheaper than the fossil shell. So,
is the $4 on the fossil planted, or is that just $4 for the shells?
That's planted.
Okay.
So the $2.50 would be on the pile there. So I think we broke it out. So it's right around. It's close to the same price for actually dredging it up at about $2.50 or so. It's just the planting and transportation when you're running all the way across the bay does add some other cost.
$6 on the seed to go all the way up on the Potomac. That's a pretty good price.
Yep. No, that's, if you're hiring just a couple boats to do that, I think we did it for closer to 7, but sort of at least $6 for those range. I think that's what you're paying at the dock right now for hand tong seed. So.
That's about what it run to for Area 8?
Probably that $6, $7 range, yep.
What kind of catch you getting?
Those areas are, over 1,000 a bushel, what we probably be moving in that. If not higher than that, with the set that we've got there this year.
Great. And those are fossil shell.
That's right. Yeah.
Andrew, what happened to the area in the Potomac? Just out of curiosity, I believe a few years ago there was an emergency regulation to protect some areas because there was a really good patch that probably around 2015. Have you looked at those lately?
We usually. Don't directly monitor those. Maryland sort of is the one who primarily monitors those areas. We have looked at them periodically, but I think that was their harvest areas. They very rarely get a good spat set in the Potomac. So I'm not intimately familiar with that a couple of years ago, but I think that was one of those. We did similar things when we got a very high spat set in the mob jack in one of our areas. We just took that out of the rotation list for a year to allow that to recover. So I think they did a similar thing there when they saw a very high spat set that they didn't want to go immediately and harvest on that, give it some opportunity to grow up.
That was Maryland that did that.
Yeah.
A good spat set on the Potomac, it would be a poor spat set in Virginia anywhere. And this year, it was probably any spat set in Potomac. The small orchards, or the orchards from that good spat set a few years ago, are still living in the lower. And basically, from the middle river up, the freshet has almost killed everything that's up there. So, conditions are poor.
I'll tell you, Andrew, in Rappahannock, too, Area 3 and Area 5, I was very disappointed in the spat set on fossil shell up there. Absolutely none whatsoever. I don't know what happened there. We just didn't get anything.
Well, this is the areas that got fossil shell in the lower Rappahannock.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see if there's an F, it was planted with fossil shell. If there was no fossil shell planted, there's nothing there, and we have some house shell ones. So you can see the areas that did get fossil shell on area one, the six highest areas in spat set this year did get fossil shell, and they had the highest spat set in the areas that didn't get fossil shell, as well as some that didn't. I mean, there's always going to be some variability. This is area four and six. Again, this is areas that didn't get any. House shells over here, fossil shell, house shell, house shell. Area 7, again, this didn't get any, but sort of fossil shell falls right in the middle. It sort of depends on what you get, but, you know, there wasn't bat set in most areas, but a lot of the areas that did get fossil shell this year are in the sort of upper end of where the spat set occurred. This is a lower James here, so the areas that got fossil shell.
You're saying it all depends on when you put it down.
A lot of it's, you know, when you put it down. I mean, if you plant it, you know, now and it's got sediment all over it, or it's just not there. But from what we've seen, I mean, on a river-wide area, on a large piece of bottom like that, house shell, fossil shell, I mean, you can't tell them apart long-term. I mean, if the set are there and the shell are there at the right time, you're going to get a set. And this is, again, the areas that got fossil shell in Tangier Sound. I think Dan can speak to that, got some of the higher spat sets that we saw over in the area, too.
Yeah, it did. I do have a question, Andrew. I'm sorry. Was he done? I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Before it comes to, I just wanted to make sure before it comes to a vote, the seed areas is 7 and 8 and Rappahannock, Shell Rock, and Potomac, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How many on each place, you know, estimated?
We're looking at around 5,000 in the Potomac and 10,000 and 10,000 for the Rappahannock and the Pocomoke.
Okay.
Any other questions? Well, I guess you're going to need us to.
Did Tommy been there yet?
I didn't see you. Go ahead.
Andrew, in talking with some of the boats that work Mob Jack Friday and today, they can't find anything on Toasty. And we set that aside an extra season because we had such a high spat set on it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts or feelings on what's going on there?
Well, there have been some poachers there caught in the mob jack recently. And I'm not sure if in terms of not finding any market size oysters or just nothing there.
Well, you know, what I had heard today, Friday the conversation was no markets. The conversation today is nothing there, period. It seems like the shell, the spat, the markets, the smalls, it's all gone.
You know, the culch levels were pretty low there. So we'd like to reshell those areas, but in terms of what happened to make them sort of disappear like that? You know, I don't have a firm answer to give you on that one.
Do you have any feeling for when it was there from a survey or the last survey you were burning or anybody when it was?
Years ago it was there. it's a small place anyway, yeah. Isn't it, Andrew?
They're relatively small areas too, so but if there was
is it the 20 some acre plan or something like that?
Yeah, there's yeah, about that. I mean, Browns Bay is a bigger portion of it. So
doesn't have the, that place doesn't have a tendency to shift or cover in a storm or
not there.
I don't know anything about it.
No, it's relatively stable bottom. It's just a matter of whether they are getting carried off or.
It's a bar, you know. Mm-hmm. Most of them were on a drop off on the edge. It was about at East River Falls Bar was about it, I think. Some of them did get their limit there, but I don't know how they done today.
Mm-hmm. A lot of both sound like they got their limit and were in that respect.
That's a small place too.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed it, but do you have a picture of the map for where you put the alternative substrate in the lower drain?
I might not have pulled that up, but actually it's right there on Nansbin Ridge area there. So those areas that are really sparse out there.
Which side of Nansbin Ridge?
I guess it would be sort of the northerly side there, or well, not kind of like, I guess it'd be the towards the Smithfield side, so away from Newport News there, so away from the Shell Plant area, sort of towards, yeah, yeah.
Well, Andrew.
Yeah.
This place that Tommy brought up, I don't know if I'm remembering right, the Barnum Object. Weren't this the place that had like a record set and spat set?
Yeah, this was the area that got a very high spat set there that we mentioned earlier there that we left one of the bars out of the rotation and the other one in the rotation. Yep, and that was about two years ago, I think. 2016, yep.
Well, I mean, and then you said you were going to reshell it, right? I mean, didn't I just hear you say that?
Yep.
And there's nothing there? I mean, it had a record set and spat set, and there's nothing there now, and you're going to reshell it?
Well, there's not much colts there on the bottom right now, so the oysters don't seem to be there, and there's not very much shell to catch a set there if it did get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think as a long-term, I think the places that I don't know, the less yielding places might, oystering could get, it's in fairly good shape now. It's not what it was a few years ago, but it's in fairly good shape now with the, you know, we've got the lower limits and with the, or, you know, the 16 and with the staggering, but I think it could get critical according to, you know, if you look at the Rappahannock and you look at the Pocomoke, what's happened this year, it could get, you know, if it weren't for the Tangier sign and the James River and that upper part of the Rappahannock, it could get real critical. But I think as a long-term thing, I'm not saying anything needs to be changed and not changed directly, but I think we need to start basing how we spend our money on what yields. Maybe I'm out of line, but I don't see any need to, I mean, that just sounds foolish to me. I thought I remember Jim saying it's the most strike he had ever seen. Maybe I'm remembering that wrong, but, and now there's nothing there.
I would tend to agree. I mean, at some point it's diminishing returns. And, if we got a finite amount to begin with, regardless of whether it's a good producing area or not, if it's not going to come to fruition, I can't say I remember, but I think we had this problem in this area 6 years ago. But
there's something up. They didn't last.
I mean, they're folks. That's a law enforcement issue. So.
Yeah.
But let me ask this question. I think I know where Dan's coming from. Is this an area that's easily susceptible to poaching?
Yes.
Yeah. And do we want to put our resources where in a spot like this instead of putting them somewhere else?
Well, I mean, there's definitely, you know, I'm not sure if we'd be able to get all these 586 acres, so there'll be some areas that we might not want to look at.
Just shy 800, didn't
it? Right. So there's already
127 acres somewhere else, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I voted. I think I was the one spoke up against it when Jim wanted to plant up there on areas 9 and 10 a few years ago when we were having all the problems with poaching. What's the point? There's no need. You know, if areas that's that close, I don't know what's going on down there. I don't know nothing about it. I know just as much about Egypt as I do Mobject. But but you know, we've got to look at this as a statewide thing. And to throw money there that's not going to amount to anything, you know, money's getting funny. And you know, I know we do have more, but it we need more that needs planting. We need more that needs shelling. We need more that needs seed. And to throw money on a place just because I think that kind of thinking needs to take a back burner.
Well, I guess the sort of, I definitely agree that there's some tough decisions that will continue to need to be made about where we put the limited amount of shells we can put down. But with the Mobject and the current rotation that we have, this is one of those areas that is in the same rotation as the York River. So right now, if there was no one working at Pulses or Toastache, they'd be piled up with other folks there at Blackberry and.
I'm not saying the Mobject in a hole. But that stuck out to me. Maybe I remembered it wrong. How much strike I remember? Well, it got shut down for an extra season, and now there's absolutely nothing there. And you want to shell it again? I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I've made my point. I'm not going to keep beating a dead horse.
To your point, we had three boats that were in Great Wicomico Saturday night that had stopped at Toastache from the eastern shore on the way down, and they were the ones that gave me the information, couldn't find anything, so they're forced to be one of the 42 that were up the bay. So that's, and I just bring it up because it's, I mean, I think we all know what's going on, and I don't know the answer to it, but it's
no, but if it is a law enforcement issue, and that's a separate chapter in another book. At the same time, if your car keeps getting broken, you don't park it in the same spot.
Right. No, that's a fair point there.
Does law enforcement know it's an issue?
They've got some people out there this year, so I haven't specifically said this is an issue, but, I mean, a lot of these areas, we've talked to them before about it, yeah. And this is one of the area I think they did catch some folks working out at night in Mobject this year, so.
Well, sounds like we know where it went.
I just hope it doesn't damage Brown's Bay, tell you. I hope that's not in the same situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good that, you know, if they've caught a few, maybe that will kind of
stop them. You don't think so?
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those that in terms of replenishment, it's one of those things that we'd like to try to do it in the areas most in need, but try to take that into account. And you can make a recommendation for that reason, but I'd be willing to, if you want to express that as a, this is why we don't feel this area should be replenished, that's something you guys could do, I think.
I do think it would be good for the commission, and Wayne has the privilege of being here and hearing it, but I think it would be good to have those concerns heard at that level.
I could definitely say that SMAC expresses these concerns for, then Wayne, you'd be feel free to add on there that right. There's some reasons they have some concerns about replenishment in this area.
Absolutely.
The downside of that is that Brown Shoal is coming back really good, and it's almost like you'd rather sacrifice that little one because they're just going to move out to Brown Shoal now. Well, it's just getting ready to be put out there.
But that little one won't catch up in time enough to keep them off of Brown Bay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can make law enforcement more aware of what's going on and to maybe upgrade their efforts there. Mm-hmm. And keep an eye on things.
There are no plans for areas 9 and 10 anything closer to the Eastern Shore?
9 and 10 have that alternative stone. So we did do some replenishment work in that area this year. That area was open for a short season, but we'd like to do that larger size alternative substrate along the border area there as a potential poaching resistant sanctuary that might provide some weed stock to the areas further downstream. And all the permitting is now in place for that, so we'd be able to roll if the money is there for that work.
Any other comments? Questions?
I think, you know, when a motion's brought forward and we get ready to vote on it, we can certainly go to the commission. And Andrew can bring it up, and I can support his recommendations on our concerns about the live jack area in Coast Aid. And we can have some discussions with the commission on maybe what needs to be done, or maybe we could put this area on a back burner and find an area that is less conducive to poaching and do some restoration there. What does that mean?
There's definitely plenty of other areas that could use some shells. So.
So if there's no further discussion, I guess we work on motion. Somebody have to make a motion, please. Set.
Yeah, I mean, I'll make a motion. I mean, I'm pretty happy with it, you know. Don't know of a lot that we could change. I mean, we're trying to discussed a few things here, you know, but overall, I think it's a good plan. So I'll go ahead and make a motion that we accept Andrew's 2019 proposed oyster restoration and replenishment plan.
We have a motion.
With the stipulation about Monta.
Yep.
We got a motion and we have a second.
I'll second.
We have a second. You hear the motion good, Dan? You understand?
Yes, I'm good. Yep.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
Abstain. Okay. One abstention. Mr. Cohen.
All right. The motion passes. And
thank you, Andrew. It is a good plan. Things have gone downhill a little bit since last year. And, of course, that's nobody's fault but Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. We just have to deal with that the best we can. We appreciate your hard work. But before we leave, I think there's maybe one or two things that some of the people here have mentioned we would like to discuss with you and certainly staff here, like about the patent tongs on the boat. And Jason, you may want to bring that up.
Well, we have a situation that I've been working with Ernie, and we went up to Deep Rock, and third leg we got in iron ore, you know, there's a lot of iron ore there, so tongs got hung up, Ernie finally got them broke loose, they were damaged, we couldn't use them anymore, so we had to turn around, run there about an hour, go back in the windmill, he was lucky he had a double pad in the back of his truck, pick up a double pad, go back all the way back up to the rock again. We started working at 9 o'clock this morning. And we were fortunate enough, you know, to get a limit at 1 o'clock. But, you know, it looks like to me that we could probably, why can't we do something about having a second pair of tongs on the boat? I mean, you certainly can't use them. I mean, what harm would it be to carry an extra pair of tongs on your boat to go out of work you wouldn't have to do what we did today, right?
And what I understand, this isn't an isolated incident. It happens quite frequently.
It's that iron ore is hard on tongs, I tell you. Walter stays busy this time of year, I can tell you that. I mean, what y'all's feelings are, Rod, Jim, you know, I mean, why was it, you can have 10 pound shaft tongs on a boat.
I don't think it'd make any difference, but does the code actually say?
Yeah, it's code.
I asked.
Code or regulation?
I asked the officer, and he said it was the same as the drudge in the regulation. You couldn't have an extra pair. The only way around it was I had to have a double set license.
All we can do is look for the proof of that, mm-hmm. and Andrew, when he makes his
presentation on the 26th can bring that to the commission's attention.
A double set license is not very expensive. It might be.
No, it might, you know.
Well, no. That's what it is. Or a double pat down rig or two license.
Just the one set, on, I mean, you can't use but one set unless you have a double rig.
That's right. I mean, you got one mask, one gag, you can't pull but one line.
Yeah. Well, if you did that,
you say it's not isolated, so just make sure that someone provides Andrew with maybe how many occurrences it's been.
I can get some numbers from Walter.
He said it's not specified in the law about the pat tongs, but it's his gear. So you had it from an MPO.
Yeah.
Okay. So and Deep Rock's that really first. That's the first part to look into.
Yeah, and Deep Rock's really the major, the only area that we have problems because there's so much iron over there. You know.
As a buyer, I can substantiate it's not every day, but it's been, I would term it a regular occurrence. Yeah. It certainly is not.
I would say half of the boats out there is probably damaged. Some of them have lost their gear, and some of them have damaged their gear.
I've got to find out what you're running into there first. I don't know how you're running into that situation. So.
Got it written down there.
And the other thing was about, and I think we discussed it at the last Shellfish Advisory, something about instead of just a patent tong survey, in the fall could we get like a drench survey or a hand scrape survey? Mm-hmm. In order to get a better idea of what the density of oysters or what it looks like.
Well, I guess that wouldn't really give you a better idea of the density, but we do a dredge survey that would sort of tell you the per bushel count in those areas, and I can. It's not as extensive as our patent tong survey, but we do that every year. And it's just a matter of finding more boat time to do that in addition to everything else.
And, you know, just as an example, like Ernie and then went to Maratica at the start of the season, and they couldn't make it there as well. And you could go there with a hand scrape, and it was, you know, it's like Christmas.
Right. Well, we actually added Maratica wasn't one of our patent tong areas, so we just did a scrape survey there. So it's sort of actually the reverse. We'll have better information of whether you could make it work with patent tong or densities by doing a patent tong there. Based on our scrape survey or dredge survey, Maratica looked like you could make it with patent tongs, but we were basically not, that wasn't accurate based on the dredge survey, but when we patent tonged up there, it confirmed that, yeah, you couldn't make it with a pair of patent tongs, obviously. So we actually get better information with our patent tong survey in terms of what type of gear type would work there than we would with a scrape. I mean, we'd be able to tell you if you could make it with a scrape, by doing a scrape survey, but not the other way around. But usually you have a pretty good idea if you can make it with a scrape by the patent tong. But that makes sense.
You're going to give it quieter.
Any other business? Any other questions or comments? If not, when's the next meeting?
I'd like to don't have one set now, but I'd like to sort of take a look at we do a spring survey of some areas and maybe have a few more meetings before we really get into any harvest season that we go in there. So we usually try to actually have a decision in August. So, you know, I think if we have at least three meetings between that now and that August meeting, that would actually give SMAC some time to have some thorough discussion on it. So,
Mr. Chairman,
yeah,
I would like to ask at one of those meetings that we have a specific discussion on the Rappahannock after he gets his spring survey done and kind of reevaluate the last 20 years there and dedicate some time and get some input on what everyone thinks. Is it working? Can we change it? Could we do something different?
I think that we could definitely.
Definitely do that.
And I'd like to get someone else up here other than me for at least one of those meetings. And sort of I've reached out to some folks at VIMS and talked about sort of some things have definitely changed since sort of the mid-2000s. And it would be good to sort of maybe at that first meeting have basically just sort of flood us with information that's pertinent to future management decisions, then have a couple meetings to actually work through any potential management changes that we want to make or sort of long-term planning, and then come out with a season plan later on. So I think that would be sort of the time frame and order of operations there, if that is amenable to the group.
Yeah, I'm sure over 20 years the scientific information is changing also. We need to look at things. So I think that's a good idea, Tom, to reevaluate the things that we're doing, you know, find out what we're doing right, find out what we're doing wrong.
Like a waterman could go with them on the survey.
Yeah, you're anytime we give me a call, we can try to figure it out. But
last time I wanted to do it.
Well, no free rides. We've got to put you to work.
I was going to say, we will put you to work. You're
welcome to join us. Well, we did one free last time and it got stopped.
Yep. Oh. Yeah, that was a mess. All right. Well, first of all, thank you, Andrew, again, for all your hard work.
Appreciate
putting this all together.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming, and hopefully next meeting we'll give you a nice tour of our new location there at Fort Monroe.
Yeah.
It's
kind of
nice
here.
I like it here.
We can do every other movie.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Have a good one. See you.
All
right. Oh, yeah, Beverly there.
I thought this building was built for the lock.
Well, drive safe.
Oh, yeah. I got you. Yeah, sorry, I didn't get a chance.